forensics. To most people, forensics means a TV show where people wear lab coats and look into microscopes and provide decisive testimony in court cases. There are over 12,000 forensic scientists in the United States alone. But what do they do? And how do they get that job? And what do they think of all those television shows? We sat down with a husband and wife team, both forensic scientists, and both living in Indianapolis, Indiana. In a moment, the results of that interview. What's a forensic scientist?
It's the application of science to law. Mm-hmm. And it's examining physical evidence to determine if somebody has committed a crime, or equally important, if somebody hasn't committed a crime.
Mm-hmm. And now, you know, it seems like science, and I mean, law seems very subjective, and science seems very objective. But I guess the two work together well.
They do?
Yeah.
Most of the time. It depends on
the lawyer.
No. And of course, lawyers have their function in our legal system as well. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see what... there's some subjectivity in everything. Example, a radiologist takes an X-ray of you, and when he or she examines that X-ray, there's some subjectivity as to what they're looking at or what they're seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting.
Which is why it has to be interpreted after the fact, kind of thing, right? Like the radiologist takes the X-ray, but someone else interprets it.
Yeah, the physician who's doing the examination.
Yeah, right.
Or somebody that's diagnosing a head cold.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a head cold or is it pneumonia?
Right. How do you end up in this line of work? Now, tell us about your individual journey. So you were.
I was in the Army.
Ah.
I was a CID agent, that's criminal investigator for the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And the Army operates the laboratory that supplies forensic analysis to all of the military services, Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, etc. And so I went from being a field agent into the laboratory for a two-year school, and it was in firearms and tool mark identification, often called ballistics.
Mm-hmm.
Where I learned how to, you know, did this bullet come from this gun, or did this screwdriver make this tool mark, that type of thing.
Well, so this is straight out of CSI.
I was going to say Quincy, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Depending on your generation,
well,
it's either Quincy.
We both met Jack Klugman, who played Quincy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, was he really messy?
Well, not when we met him.
Yeah, so now how did you end up in this line of work?
Well, initially, I thought I was going to go into police work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was studying sociology in the university and came to the conclusion that that was really not for me.
Hmm.
But I still wanted to be in law enforcement, and so I switched into the science curriculum and trained as a criminalist at Michigan State University many years ago.
Wow.
And went into the area called forensic serology. And I worked in that for a good number of years, identifying body fluids and blood, and learning to do blood typing, and then learning to do enzyme typing, and then learning to do DNA.
Wow, so I guess the field's really changed.
It has changed.
Wow. There, yeah. From, you know, fingerprints to DNA kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, from did you do it?
Right,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To we know you were there.
Did you do this crime?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Training as a criminalist.
From the confession to the to the technical analyses.
Wow.
And so now you do you also do you do the DNA testing, that stuff? And
I did.
That's the
I
hot
did.
Stuff, right? I mean.
But when they got to the third generation of DNA, I decided that my technical background wasn't strong enough for that, and it was time to step away from that. So I worked in the field still for several years, but in the area of identifying the stains that would then be sent to DNA.
Uh-huh.
So I did that in the private sector for a number of years.
Okay, so I have to ask, and do you watch CSI or those shows?
Well, we have our favorites.
NCIS primarily.
NCIS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And do you watch it and, like, you know, find yourself, like, throwing things at the TV saying that's not how it happens?
Well, or? Not really, because, you know, it's an entertainment vehicle and it has to have, you know, they get stuff done instantly. And Abigail Abbs is a caller on NCIS. She's a one-person crime lab. I used to run this lab in Marion County here for Indianapolis. I had 65 employees. And if I'd had two of her, I could have just got it all done.
In 22 minutes.
Yes. Yeah. And everyone's taxes would have gone down. As
exactly.
And that's like back when it was Quincy.
Yeah.
And he had Sam. And the.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a Quincy. We found a body. Yeah. Yeah. So, I bet, I mean, we'd be really interested to hear about a case, you know, an interesting case, or a time when, you know, your forensic analysis really made the difference in a case.
Well, there's, I was in the lab in Japan with the Army, and we provided support to the government of Guam, which was a trust territory at that time. Now it's a full-fledged, you know, U.S. possession. Hmm. We had a case involving three young people that were murdered, and my analysis of the fired bullets in conjunction with the suspect firearm showed that these bullets had been fired from that firearm. Now, I can't say he fired the firearm,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
but then the investigators could go forward and do something, and we made an identification allowed him to be convicted and sentenced to life.
Wow, wow. Hmm. So, what do you like about the job? I mean, I know you're retired now.
Well, I'm still working.
Oh, you are still working.
I'm doing training down in Belize right now.
Oh.
He's got four students down there.
For the government of Belize.
Really?
Wow.
And I've trained over in Botswana and Jamaica.
Really?
Just over in Palestine, helping them develop a lab for the Palestinian civil police.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
So now you've gone from being a guy who does this work to being someone who only trains people, right? You don't work in the lab yourself anymore.
Well, we have a small private lab in our house, and I do some...
Well, who doesn't?
Some work there, but not, you know... It's primarily training and teaching.
Huh. Wow. How interesting. So guys are... I mean... It almost feels like CIA type of thing. You have your own private lab in the house. Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, and that's a case where you do, like, work for hire kind of thing, right? The lab
yeah.
in your house?
Yeah. I'm going to be working a case in Cleveland.
Cleveland?
Yeah.
I live in Cleveland.
That's funny. I thought you lived in New York.
No, that's
we're originally from New York. Right. Yeah.
Her first 9 years in forensics was the Cuyahoga County Coroner's Office.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, lately it seems to me the coroner's office in Cleveland is very busy. It's like a body a week they just find.
Unfortunately,
all over the place.
Societally, that's happening just about everywhere.
Wow. So tell us about your case in Cleveland.
Well, it's going to help the attorney for, I don't even know which side because mm-hmm. I don't care really. Mm-hmm. The science has to, you know, be the ultimate decider of what's, you know, what the results are. So I'll be examining some fired components to see what the answer may or may not be. But you were talking about, you know, some of the things that make us gratified, I guess, for our positions. Is our first DNA case in this county, we exonerated a young man who had been accused of rape.
Wow.
We were able to show that his DNA did not match the spermatozoa that was found in the vaginal tract.
Yeah.
Hmm. Even though he'd been picked out of a lineup.
And it turned
that's
out that
powerful.
It turned out that was a situation where prisoners in the jail had switched bracelets and someone else went to give the blood sample.
Oh, wow.
This kind of thing. So the actual person, you know, had not given his blood sample.
Uh-huh,
so that was interesting stuff.
Those guys could have gotten the Tour de France.
So I imagine it's much more gratifying to have a case like that where you know, someone is exonerated because of your work.
I suspect in DNA probably 35% result in exonerations.
I think they do.
And what that does is it lets the police officer, well, first of all, it exonerates the suspect.
Right.
and lets him and her get along with their life. The other thing is it lets the law enforcement officers then target their energies in a more productive manner.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of effort right now on what's called cold cases, which are cases where they haven't found a suspect.
Oh, there is a beer, right? Okay.
And now they're going back looking at evidence and seeing, is there anything here we can work with? And they're finding, oftentimes because of the advances in DNA, and they can get results from such small amounts of blood or body fluids, that they can get a DNA profile and they can compare it against the database of arrested
And they keep, like, the somewhere where they do this, but they keep, like, the stuff from a crime scene for, like, forever, right? I mean, like, there must be some time when they throw it away.
Well, the DNA, on a murder case, it's the evidence is supposed to be kept in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
The DNA
doesn't always happen, but where it does, it's very good.
The DNA database is maintained by the FBI lab that's called CODIS. So all suspect DNA is submitted into the CODIS system and then can be retrieved nationally.
Wow.
So there are some people who've been in prison for years who are now being released because they're finding that.
So who's the guy that's behind that, the Innocence Project?
It's Peter Schecht and Peter Neufeld and Barry Schecht.
Barry Schecht, yeah. So, I mean, those guys are doing some amazing work. They must work with people like you all the time, right? I mean,
well, yeah.
They make use of the results of our...
Yeah, originally they were both a bit adversarial, but I think that's changed a bit.
Wow, yeah, it's amazing. So what's your feeling about the justice system in that regard? I mean, there are a lot of innocent people in prison?
Well, I don't know if there's a lot of innocent people, but there certainly have got to be some just because of... And again, the DNA didn't exist at the time these people were, you know, so it could be inept lawyering by either the prosecution or defense. Mm-hmm. It could be erroneous eyewitnesses. It could be erroneous confessions. There's a variety of things.
A lot of circumstantial things. Yeah. Often,
I don't think it's. I don't think it's a horrendous percentage. But if you happen to be the one that's erroneously convicted, it's 100%.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
So our job is
let alone be on death row or something.
Exactly. Right? Our job is to try and preclude that from happening.
Hmm. So you testify a lot in court?
Not a lot, but it's usually on the more complicated cases that we're called to do that.
Well, if your results exonerate, then obviously you're not going to go to court. If they include, then you may be called to testify as an expert witness. So I've testified probably 500 times in my career.
Hmm.
If you were a drug chemist,
yes,
or you know, in that area, then you're likely to go to court a whole lot more often than those of us in other fields would go.
So if you go to testify at court, how does that work? I mean, who's kind of paying for your time?
Well, if you're a government employee, then your time is being paid for by the taxpayers because that's just one part of your function of being a laboratory analyst is to provide opinion testimony.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a civil case, then it's going to be whichever side has called you.
I see. Mm-hmm. And so then they pay you to get there, and then they pay you some regular. Is there like a standard rate?
Well, it depends. Yeah, you sort of negotiate that with whomever's calling you. But if you're a government employee, you just go to court and testify. And
so then it's like instead of doing something else, the thing you're doing is going to court.
Mm-hmm.
Like you might be in a lab or you might be going to court.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the question occasionally comes up is, you know, well, you're being paid for your testimony.
Mm-hmm.
Say, no, I'm being paid for my time.
right. Exactly. Yeah.
Because the testimony is going to be based on what I found.
Yeah.
It's not going to be based on what you want to hear.
I see, yeah. Now, do the lawyers, when the lawyers bring you in, and you've testified, let's say, you know, more than 100 times, do they want to coach you? They want to tell you, here's how you should...
Always.
That's just part of the legal system, is they want to... Well...
They want you to phrase it in the way that most benefits their side of the case.
Exactly. Right.
And there are times when you can do that and times when you say, forget it.
No,
you cannot do it that way.
You have to say, okay, here's the truth, and it'll very trite. It'll set you free. Mm-hmm. You have to say what the science has allowed you to say, and you can't skew it in favor of one side or the other.
Right.
That doesn't mean they may not try to get you to do it.
Right.
But again, that's part of our legal system.
Do you feel like sometimes you have the truth? Obviously what you're testifying is true as far as you know it. But do you sometimes feel like the lawyer doesn't have the skill to communicate that truth to the jury? You ever get the sense that I just said this thing and the jury didn't get what I said?
Well, that's possible, because you're tried by a jury of your peers, mm-hmm. which are 12 citizens that have been called for jury duty and been mm-hmm. selected, mm-hmm. And you're going to have a whole range of from people with double PhDs down to high school GED. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that they're not smart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because but they might not understand the thing you're saying when you're talking French.
So you have to put it in simplistic terms. Mm-hmm. I mean,
was there DNA I know there was serum analysis and all that. Was there DNA involved in the O.J. Simpson case in 1994?
Yes.
Yes, there was.
So what do you guys think? O.J., did he do those murders?
I've been asked about that. I know all the analysts. I know the people that testified for defense.
Yeah.
O.J. Simpson, in my judgment, bought the best defense money could buy. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was subsequently convicted in the civil trial.
Yeah, right.
With evidence that should have been brought in. But O.J. Simpson wouldn't have been convicted in that trial for a variety of reasons. One of them is that the judge just let the court run rampant.
Right.
And then the people who were on the jury, some of them, he was their hero, and they weren't going to convict him. Mm. That's just, mm-hmm. again, that's, it's part of the theater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were living in Los Angeles at the time, and it was really what a moment that was.
There's nothing else going on, right?
Everybody. There's dancing in the streets when he right. was acquitted.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we're from Buffalo, too, so, I mean, we grew up, O.J. Simpson was our childhood hero, no question about it.
I was stationed in the military in Buffalo, both Grand Island and Lockport.
Really? Oh. No, we grew up in Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
That's where we're from. Ah, that's interesting. So, what would you tell someone if they thought, maybe I'd like to be a forensic scientist? Would you tell them it's a good idea, bad idea, changing too much, not worth it, and then what would be your advice to get into that line of work?
Two-part question. So, mm-hmm. first of all, it's been an extremely gratifying career for me, and I think I can speak for my wife as well. We met at a forensic conference, as a matter of fact. It's a very useful occupation. It's something that it helps society. That seems sort of trite, but it does. Mm-hmm. How do you get into it? The more science courses you can take, chemistry and biology and botany and those types of things, physics, will better prepare you. The only caveat is don't look at it as it's going to be like you see on CSI or NCIS, or because again, those shows are made for entertainment. What they do isn't incapable of being done, it just can't be done anywhere near as fast.
Mm-hmm. Or by the number of people doing things. Mm-hmm. Because the field has become so technical that you have people that specialize in firearms. You have people that specialize in analyzing blood and body fluids. You have other people that specialize in drugs, others that specialize in document examination, others that specialize in fingerprints. In the TV show, you've got one or two people who are doing all of those
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
So the techniques they're talking about, yes, those are all possible. But to have one person doing...
And to only work on one case at a time, also, I mentioned,
yes.
is strange, right?
Yes.
I mean, you must have, like, the person doing fingerprints just goes from one to the next to the next to the next, right?
Continually, in any of the sciences, yes.
Right. Hmm. Yeah. So how much time do you spend, because I'm trying to picture, I imagine you, with goggles and, test tubes, but I imagine there's also a lot of, especially in your case, figuring out, projectile thing, like stuff on paper with a pencil, physics.
The percentage of time that you actually spend doing analysis is probably about 45%. You have all the administrative stuff of receiving the evidence and maintaining that chain of custody.
Cataloging and, yeah. Right.
And all of that, and because of the accreditation requirements and you wanting to make sure that what you're doing is 100% accurate, which is as righteous as it should be, lots and lots of paperwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just have to do it. You have to maintain. And because it is an adversarial system, you have to prepare your work notes that are discoverable to both prosecution and defense, and again, as it should be. But those notes have to be very meticulous, and they should be sufficient that another analyst could come in and look at your notes and resurrect what you've done on the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have a defense examiner come in and review what you've done, or somebody for the prosecution, if you're a defense examiner. And
yeah. It's very interesting. It's fascinating.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. What else? There's what are the hours like?
Well, normally Monday to Friday we worked it was like 8 to 4:30 kind of thing, but then there's always overtime. I had a 24/7 operation downtown because I had a crime scene unit.
Mm.
So we had people that were on 4 10-hour days, and you know, we had flex time and what have you, which helps free up more space and time for people to do things without the phones interrupting and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, most labs are pretty much 8 to 5 days a week.
Mm. And your current work then going overseas, how frequently are you gone now?
Well, I'm doing this for the U.S. State Department on contract to help the Belizean government.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be down there a total of 10 two-week periods this year. I've already made 3 trips, so I've got 7 to go.
And is it work? Is it all work and no play, or do you?
It has been, because I was working on the weekend. Other than going to, there's a beautiful Anglican church in Belize City. It's over 200 years old. I've gone to. That's the closest you can get to Lutheran in Belize.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I've gone to that church on the Sunday, but on the Saturdays I was working on a project for Palestine, for the United Nations. So I was playing, sit in your room and type on your computer.
Oh my goodness. But so you don't go along for the beaches and the dinners and the sunsets and the margaritas?
No.
Oh boy.
No, it's pina coladas.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah, I've never been there. But I have heard the crime is bad there.
Well, I think crime is probably, it depends on where you go. There's parts of, no matter where you live, there are some cities that there are areas of the city you just don't walk in.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. How does the word get out that you're a person the State Department could send to Belize? Like, how does that connection get made?
Well, in my case, it's 44 years of doing this.
So they just know your name.
So, you know, I've been very active in the professional associations and past president of a couple of them and editor of the journal and wrote a lot of articles and et cetera.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting.
So you're kind of like a celebrity in the forensics field.
Well, yeah, my sober cred is I'm the world's greatest firearms examiner.
Wow.
It's a self-appointed title.
Yeah, yeah, wow.
But he can call anyone.
But I've used that for the last 40 years. Yeah. So.
And they know who's on the phone.
Do you hunt or shoot guns yourself for sport?
I'm a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a hunter, but...
Like at a range kind of thing?
Yeah, and I collect ammunition as a hobby.
Oh, so there's a hobby for you.
It's a very heavy hobby.
But it is.
I guess sometimes you collect it from a body, I guess, right?
Well, you can't keep that. That has to go to evidence.
Oh, right.
What kind of ammunition do you collect?
Anything from 22 CB cap up to 50 caliber.
Really?
So it's a range of like this to about 6 inches projectile.
Wow. Huh.
Do you keep that in the house?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's safe. There's been studies done where you could... You can shoot into it, you can burn it, and it's like popcorn. There's no force, because when it's in a gun, it's got a containment.
Oh, yeah, right.
And if it's in a fire, it just pops like popcorn.
Wow.
Heavy popcorn.
Yeah. 50 caliber popcorn. Yeah. How interesting. Well, you guys, thank you so much for spending the time to talk with us. We're going to edit a few things together and stuff like that. And,
right.
Yeah, that's...
Well, if you send the disc off to forensics and they...
Exactly.
Examine our voices and stuff.
Wow.
Complicated.
Oh, it's so interesting.